This is episode 436, dated Monday, March 30th, 2026.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everyone. And welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. I am Bob Branco. Good to be with all of you today. Before we continue, let me introduce the remainder of our spelunkers. We start out with Don Wardlow.
Hi there. It's in the 50s in Jersey. They're saying it might get 80 tomorrow.
We're going to be close to 60 tomorrow, I think, because we're near the water. But, yeah, we're going to have a little bit of a tease of warm weather before it cools down with a little bit of rain later on in the week. Reverend Michael Garrett.
Yes, and welcome from Missouri City, Texas, right out of Houston, where it is about 83 degrees. We've had some beautiful weather, but we're in a drought. And we're going to get some much-needed rain over the Easter weekend.
Peter Alchil.
Welcome from Coos Bay, Oregon. It's probably around 55 degrees here. We're having a couple of nice days, and then we're going to get a bunch of rain, which we still need. It is still the rainy season, and we need more rain. So we might get soaked when we go outside, but there's a reason why the mascot for the Oregon sporting teams is the Ducks. Quack, quack. Or the Beaver.
Mitch Pomerantz will not be here today. He has other commitments. I wish his wife, Donna, a very happy birthday. They celebrated this week on Catalina Island. I hope they had a good time. Mitch, we miss you, and you can tell us all about your trip the next time we talk. Luther King is recuperating. I did find out it's a voice issue again. He's had that issue in the past, and I guess it's reoccurred. So, we hope for the best for Luther and a speedy return very, very soon. I want to thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. We appreciate it. Also, Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our programs on your chat board. It's appreciated. Our media sources, thank you very much for what you do, airing our programs. And finally, Jacqueline Sylvia, from JS Web Solutions. Thank you for archiving our shows on my website. If you want to catch them, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to Branco Events. It'll be Sports Roundtable Podcasts. That's what you click on. And you'll see most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
And I want to mention also that this is episode 436, dated Monday, March 30th, 2026. I want to say hi to Trish, who is our facilitator for today's program, along with Brad, who is our streamer. And because we are being streamed, let me give out our email address for those people who would like to write us. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's B-O-B-B-R-A-N-C-O. 93@gmail.com. Well, the final four for the men is now official. We have UConn versus Illinois and Arizona versus Michigan. I thought we'd open up with any thoughts about the NCAA tournament and what's going on so far.
And don't forget the women, as Don will remind us.
Oh, yeah.
And the women. We want to hear about the women also.
Don, talk about the women.
By all means, they're not all the way done yet. Tonight they have the last round of the Elite Eight. You've got Texas against Michigan, and you got TCU against South Carolina, and that could get real ugly. That I'm afraid TCU doesn't have a shot against them. I'm pretty sure you're going to be looking at Texas, South Carolina, UCLA, and Connecticut, all four. Number one seeds. And yesterday, Notre Dame gave it their level best against my Huskies. Finally, in the fourth quarter, the Huskies started playing the way the Huskies do, and Notre Dame couldn't stay even with them. That was one game yesterday. UCLA, again, they beat their opponent pretty good. I forget who it was, unfortunately, but they're in, and all those games are going to be on Friday night and Sunday. Those are the women. The men's Final Four are going to be Saturday and Monday in Indianapolis.
And the women is, where the women's tournament this year?
That's in Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But the craziest game was the UConn men's game against Duke. I mean, that was insane. Duke was so far ahead.
Don't go to the men's yet. I still have a statement
okay.
on the women's. Cause the biggest thing that I'm worried about right now is, Rory Harmon's middle finger. she hurt it in the game, the other day, and, it swole up.
Oh my, that's a big player for Texas. So
it is.
They're going to be in trouble without her.
Yeah, she's our
How'd she hurt her finger?
Somebody fouled her and she fell to the floor and she jammed it. And she sat out for a while, but she went back in. And her comments after the game was, yeah, there were four. I still have four of the fingers. So
that's optimistic.
She had six steals, and I can't remember all her stats, but even with that sore finger, she came out, she scored a couple of key baskets, and even a three pointer. So she's a tough young lady, but, I'm hoping that that finger didn't swell up and really cause her a lot of pain, but I think for this event, she's going to come out and tough it out, the best she can.
And my question is, if UConn women get to a really close game with, say, 5 minutes to play, how will they react? Because my understanding is they've only played one game that they won by fewer than 10 points.
Correct. That was against Michigan. That was very early in the year.
Right.
And it was a lot like last night's men's game. UConn had a 19-point lead against Michigan and almost missed the bed. They almost did. So it is a question. That has been a question, though. Every year that UConn has been in this position, you know, everybody says, what are they going to do with 5 minutes to go? And until last year, everybody had a lot to talk about because – the Huskies didn't get it done with, you know, 5 minutes to go in a tight game. But when it mattered last year, they pulled it off and they won their 12th national championship. And now they're looking for unlucky 13 this time around.
So we should talk about the UConn men's team. What I found astounding about that game is I had another activity I had to do yesterday. So I checked the score during a break and Duke is up by 19. I thought, okay, you know, this game is over. And then I checked it, when I had a chance with something like 3 minutes to play and Duke was up by 5. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting, but you know, 3 minutes, they should be able to hold on. And then, I turned it on with about a minute left to play and, Duke up by 3 and darned if UConn didn't pull it off. With that remarkable 3-point shot with what 0.4 seconds left to play. But there's a lot of talk on ESPN radio this morning about how Duke really gave that game away, not just, blowing that 19-point lead, but even that last play, you know, the ball was thrown into somebody, one of the Boozer people, and, you know, he should have just taken the foul. He didn't. He tried to pass the ball off and it was a bad pass and it gave UConn the chance they needed to hit a miracle shot, and the rest, as they say, is history. And the sort of argument that they were making is that Duke has a habit of doing this in big spots. They haven't won a tournament since, I can't remember when the last year was, the men's team had won a tournament for, I don't remember how long it was. And even North Carolina, who did not have a very good year this year, won the most recent NCAA men's tournament over Duke, you know, trying to say they, you know, that they won the most recent one. So the question they're asking is Duke just not, can't quite handle the big stage yet? And I'm not sure how to respond to that, but they found a way to lose the game yesterday.
And they missed a lot of foul shots down the way that could have sealed things for them that might have, you know, kept the Huskies out of it. But UConn, you know, they made just enough, and then they made that incredible shot that was from almost half court. I unfortunately don't know who made it. It wasn't one of their big guys.
It was a freshman.
It wasn't Demery, and it wasn't Solo Ball or, you know, yeah, another big guy, Tavares Reed. It was none of those guys. I don't know who it was. With the broadcast, the way the UConn announcers called it, all you heard was yelling and screaming. I never did hear who, you know, made the shot. At least on the Duke broadcast, you know that the shot went through the hoop, and, you know, it was a score that guy, David Shoemaker, who's been a guest on this program, you know, yeah, he was bumming, but at least he told us the facts, what we needed to know, that it was a shot and it was scored by UConn.
Well, it's interesting to me that young fella hit the shot. He's a freshman. He was surprised that they passed him the ball, and with that little time, he said he just threw it up. But to go back to Peter's comments about Duke, I think the stars, the Boozers, or at least Cam, those guys are young, because I think his twin brother is there. But Cameron is the star, but they're kind of young. I think, maybe that has a little bit to do with it being young and putting that kind of pressure on them. And I'll go back to one of my pet peeves, and I know Mitch and I certainly agree on this, is that there are several freshmen, high caliber, superstar kind of freshmen, and it looks like they're going to be one and dones, and I really detest that availability that the NBA would go and take these freshman kids. I really don't think they're ready to go to the NBA. I wish they would at least say, you got to stay in college 2 years before you come out.
I am really curious though, Michael. The rules have changed since 2 or 3 years ago. Now athletes get paid, and I'm sure those Boozer brothers, or their star brother, gets paid close to a seven-figure, maybe more than that, or maybe I'm not sure what the amount is, but it's a lot of money. And will that be enough to keep them in college? I'll be curious to see what happens with that. You know, I know the NBA can pay them more, I guess, than, you know, the rookie contracts are more than that, but still, you sort of have to wonder. You know, with having, now they're getting paid for, you know, still playing in college, might that make a difference?
I think in some cases it will, Peter. Sure. They have a choice, and it may become a bargaining chip. You know, if that rookie contract is not as good, and the school has the resources to pay them big money, the student might decide to stay in, and at least for another year, get a little more grounded.
I know it's changed football a little bit. I mean, the Oregon quarterback, we've talked about this before, whose name I can't remember, was ready. Yeah, you know, I think ordinarily would have come out and being taken in the draft, but he's coming back because he's getting paid a chunk of money. And my theory is that he would have been picked by the New York Jets, and nobody wants to be picked by the New York Jets. And I really wonder if that's the reason he stayed. He knew he was being picked by a team that is terrible, has terrible record grooming their stars to be where what they can be. And why would anybody want to go play for that team? Especially if,
and on the other side of that, Quinn Ewers, who was the Texas quarterback, you know, he left because he knew that he was trying to get out of the way for Arch Manning,
right.
But another college offered him $6 million to stay in school and go play for them, but he chose to go to the pros. And I'm not sure how much he's making, his rookie, what his rookie contract is. I think he's with Miami, but, he chose.
I think he's going to start next year with Miami, if I remember.
He may.
But I guess, Michael, you know more with this than I do. Was Brock ready to become pro after, was it last year?
Which one?
The guy we're talking about, the former quarterback for Ewers. Texas. Ewers, right?
He left for, he left because they wanted to move him out for Arch Manning.
Right. My question though is, what do you think he was ready to go pro, or would he have done better going to whatever the other school was willing to pay him $6 million for that year?
I wasn't a good judge of this guy because I didn't think his on-field command was that good, but the coach said that in the last game they won, he called the play on the field because of the way the defense was aligned.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a fourth down and 20 on the 35 yard. It was in overtime. Fourth down and 20 on the 35 yard line, and he throws a touchdown pass to the kid that ultimately got drafted by Green Bay. So he may be a smart guy. I just don't know about his athletics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're saying the same thing about the first draft pick this year, the quarterback for Indiana, who's now drawing a blank.
Will be drafted by Vegas.
By Vegas, Vegas. Yeah. He started his career at Yale. And, that's pretty impressive. He went from Yale to somewhere else and ultimately ended up in Indiana. But, the guy clearly is pretty smart if Yale got him as a freshman. So I guess we'll see what happens, but, I really think football, it may have this whole idea of athletes being paid in college will have a huge impact on the football draft. Because if I'm a college guy and I think I'm going to be drafted by a team I have no desire to play for, and I'm going to get paid $2 million for the next year, why not stay in college? I would certainly think about that. So that's my thing. But the NBA there are fewer players, and I'm not sure it'll have as big an impact. But I am sort of curious to see if Boozer decides to stay. And if so, it may be the money that makes the difference.
Well, the University of Houston has a young man who's really good. Illinois has a young man who's good. Even my Longhorns have a young man who's contemplating going to the pros. I don't think he's ready. I really don't think he's ready to go to the pros. He has a lot of ability, but when I watched him, he didn't shoot enough. He didn't take charge. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ready. So, and there are several other schools that have freshman guys who will probably be one and done. So I just don't like that.
Yeah, no, I get you. I get you. I don't like it much either, but we live, I keep saying this, we live in a capitalist society, and if people want to get paid a lot of money to leave college, they're going to. So
speaking of the NBA, what do you think of this new proposal about a way to prevent teams from tanking?
What proposal are you referring to?
Something, the NBA, from what I understand, is trying to establish a new system which would avoid the temptation for teams to tank if they're bad. Something about a 2-year sample size instead of a 1-year. I don't understand the whole thing yet. I thought maybe one of you gentlemen might know more about that.
I heard about it, Bob, but I don't remember the details either. So, but
I guess the NBA is really noticing that teams are trying to tank on purpose.
Yeah.
And they're trying to put a stop to it.
But when you look at the records, there are a lot of teams with poor records. There aren't that many teams that are, you know, doing 500. In some seasons you could see teams that are close to 500, just above, just below. But there are a lot of teams, several teams, I don't say a lot, but there are several teams like 17 wins, like the Washington, they've only got about 17 wins, and, you know, teams with 21 wins and, you know, 57 losses and stuff like that. So I think they really do that. And I think the NBA wants teams to play all out all year, whether you win or lose.
The Wizards are 17 and 57, Mike.
Yeah.
And they're not the worst team in the East. I think Brooklyn's worse.
Yeah. So do you think they want to get in the lottery and get one of the top players coming out of college?
Oh, I'm sure they'd love that. But I think the NBA wants to try to make everybody honest. And I don't blame them in a way.
I don't blame them, and I don't know how they can do it. And the thing is, this tank would make more sense if they do the way they do it in football, where the worst record gets the first round, the second best worst record gets the second pick.
Well, they tried doing something with the lottery. That was the whole purpose for the whole lottery. You're not guaranteed the number one pick
They still have that same lottery. The first pick, the worst team gets more ping pong balls in the lottery. That's the only difference. And you would think that might temper people's desire to tank, but from what I can tell, it's not happening. And
in the lottery, it's like the first 11 or 12 teams, isn't it?
Right. And last year, I think the number 12 got the number one pick or something. It was pretty close.
Yeah. Because, you know, they put them all in the lottery and then they draw the ping pong balls or however they figure it out. But so those, and I think they order them after that. Well, I guess it, however the balls shake out, that's how the order gets set. And so you're guaranteed, one of the top 11 or 12 players. So your draft board has to be very, very insightful.
And usually in these drafts, there are two or three really, really good players. And then after that, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Between 4 through 12.
That's why I'm so concerned about all these good kids coming out. You know, they may develop, some of them may develop into really good players, but I still believe they're young. You're going to put all your hopes on these 18 or 19 year old kids.
By the way, Brooklyn is not the worst team in the East. The Pacers are.
Well, the Pacers at least have some modicum of excuse. Their best players are hurt for the year. So we can sort of excuse them, maybe. But they are terrible. And by the way, one of the games they won was against the Knicks, which to the Knicks all time embarrassment. Knicks lost to the Oklahoma City last night, the Thunder.
They're rolling.
Celtics. City. What's that, Bob?
So were the Celtics.
They lost to Minnesota was it last week? But beyond that.
Yeah, but they beat Oklahoma. They beat Atlanta. They beat Charlotte. These are hot teams. And they're beating them.
Go Celtics.
There you go.
We'll see.
Go ahead, Peter. Go ahead.
No, I'm done. I'm really curious about the Celtics. I don't know how to read them. A lot of people think they're going to win the East. I'm not sold on that because I'm just not confident that Tatum will be able to withstand the playoff pressure. I mean, they're doing a good job of getting him ready, but playoffs is not regular season, as we keep talking about. They actually play defense in the playoffs. So I'm just really curious to see how that plays itself out. But the Knicks certainly aren't going to win. I have no confidence in the Knicks. So, We'll see what happens. Oh, it's Detroit is the team that seems to be ready to, you know, to win. I don't see any.
They are missing their star player, Cade Cunningham, for a long time.
But not for long. I think he'll be back in time for the playoffs, as I understand it.
For their sake, I hope so. Well, I hope so anyway. But you never know. Celtics and Detroit might end up clashing in the semifinals, and anything can happen.
Are the Celtics at the 4 seed now, or are they the 3?
I think they're the 2.
So that they're not going to be. They might be in the finals. They might be.
Well, the Eastern Conference final, I mean.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. Maybe. And what happens in the West if it turns out to be Oklahoma City and San Antonio?
That could go either way.
That's what it looks like.
That could go either way, although Oklahoma might win it if they get the defense, which I think they do.
Speaking of the West, I was amused when I heard, you know, Gudacic, is being suspended for a game because he has too many technical fouls. I don't know if you saw this. And so, but I guess he's a chance to, he decides which game he wants to miss. It's not ordinarily a nice game. Well, the game that he's going to miss is against, guess who? The Wizards. Because
he gets to pick and choose the game he's suspended from?
That's my understanding. In any case, even if that's not true, the next game the Wizards, that Lakers play is against the Wizards. And, you know, so the Lakers will probably win that game without him, given how awful the Wizards are.
I'm surprised they give him that privilege, even though the suspension is against him. He's got the power to want to.
I'm not sure I heard that right, Bob, but I thought I heard that there is some flexibility about what game he can choose not to play in. But I may be wrong about that. I just thought it was funny that they're going to play against the Wizards, and the Gudacic quote was, "Oh, I'll sit out this game." Yeah, of course you will. They're terrible, and they're Lakers going to win anyway. So get your break, and we'll see you back against a good team. The Lakers still have to play the Thunder twice, before the season's over. And that will be really interesting to see how that plays itself out, because the Lakers could, are they the 4 seed or are they the 3? I think they're the 3. They could beat San Antonio. It's not impossible.
It's not impossible, but I'm telling you, Wemby is playing some really good basketball.
I agree.
He is playing some really good basketball.
Well, you know,
the Lakers are third. The Lakers are third.
Yeah.
48-26.
So they're going to play this, probably San Antonio in the Western semifinals. And if the Lakers continue to get better, that's going to be a really good series. I mean, here's LeBron, who's playing, you know, the third player. You know, he's used to playing the number one team. He's now number 3. And LeBron seems to have figured it out. And the Lakers seem to be playing incredibly well. They've been playing, hold your breath, a little defense. So, you know, I don't rule out the Lakers. I think they could beat the, I don't think they will, but I think they certainly could.
We'll have to wait and see on that one. Well, baseball has started up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I got a baseball question for Don.
Are you there?
Yeah. You there, Don?
I think he's muted. There we go. I'm here.
All right, Michael. What is your question?
So did you hear, you know, we've been talking about the what do you call it? The ABS?
ABS, yes.
Yeah. So there was a challenge where the catcher challenged the pitch, and then the next pitch, the batter challenged the pitch, and there was a big argument about what was going to happen. And then I think one of the players got thrown out.
The manager for the Twins got thrown out. In fact, I'm hoping Troy is on this call. He can chime in on that.
Yeah.
It was the manager for the Twins, and they were joking on a talk show this morning. Imagine that. Managers are going to argue with robots. They were exaggerating about that, though, because it was about how it took too long for the challenge to be acknowledged or something like that.
2 seconds. You get 2 seconds or something.
Yeah, and you have to tap your helmet in a very short amount of time. Yeah. So, and I like, that's one thing, that's the only thing maybe I like about it, because believe me, most of these reviews of other kinds take way too long. I mean, these basketball
games. Yeah, these are quick. These are very quick, and that's a good thing.
So you guys think that that's good for the game?
The ABS, it keeps the umpires honest, if it's possible. As long as they're quick, I have no problem with it.
I'm never going to be a fan of anything, you know, like this. Any technology, anything better than the Mark I human eyeball. That's what was good enough, you know, for 100 years. I'm never going to be in favor of it.
The only thing that the ABS is proving, though, is that umpires are making a lot of mistakes. What was the stat I heard earlier? There were 54 challenges on Saturday, and I think 24 of them were wrong. I don't remember the exact figure, but I know that's close.
Well, I'll tell you something. Anything automatic can make mistakes. YouTube has an AI feature.
Yeah,
and
that's the counter argument, Don. I heard that, too.
Very big percentage of times you ask them a very simple question, which if you had the time, you could get the answer yourself. And a lot of those times they are completely dead wrong. So it just is not something to be trusted.
The Braves lost their two challenges in three pitches Saturday to start the game.
Well, okay, Ken, I'll let you talk. I didn't ask for hands yet, but I'll let you go.
Yeah, okay. That's all I wanted to say was just that the Braves, you know, the Braves in their game, they lost two challenges in three pitches.
That's a game they ultimately won on a grand slam home run by
exactly
Dominic Smith. That's the Saturday night game against the Royals. Man, that was something. That's an ex-Met and an ex-Yankee, Dominic Smith, who's really, his career hasn't amounted to a hill of beans, but this is going to be his Sports Center moment, however long he lasts in the game.
What you're going to find is a lot of managers are going to kindly tell their players to wait a little longer, be a little more economical with when they want to challenge. You don't want to run the risk of losing both your challenges in the third or fourth inning. You should wait a little longer. I notice a lot of these guys, they mean well. A lot of them are right, even. But they're not very patient, some of them.
Getting back to the conversation between Don and Michael about the ABS, what I fear is that for better or for worse, I think the robot umpires are going to take over what the human umpires are currently doing. If it can be shown that they have a really good record of calling the pitches correctly, which right now they clearly don't. But the one thing I worry about or I wonder about is if the league tries to do that, what will the umpires do? They have a union. I don't think they're going to stand for that for very long. I think it will be.
That's a good point, Peter.
No, I think that's a very ugly thing. But, you know, tennis does it now, you know, with line calls. Does football do it now on some plays where it's, the robot makes the initial call? I don't think so, but they sort
that's
of
a scary
there
thought.
To help us certainly. What's that, Mike? Don?
Scary thought. On a game where there's 11 men on a side, how can AI possibly even come close to being right on a confusing game like that?
Well, what happened in the game yesterday between UConn and Duke, right? With all this chaos is happening, you know, I mean, the truth of the matter is I'm guessing. I can't see the thing, but there's so much craziness going on. How many potential fouls might have been called, right? With all this scrumming and whatever, and nothing was called, and we know what happened. But, you know, supposing it had been called differently.
See, and that's the thing. Games are called differently. We talk about this all the time in baseball. You know, how do you define the strike zone? But in basketball, some officials call it differently, too.
Yeah.
What may be a foul in one game, you know, just because a guy sticks his arm out to ward off a guy, you know, is that offensive foul or is it a defensive foul? You know,
there's ticky-tacky fouls that get called. And
it
eventually becomes a question of how much is the referee getting paid. You know, that's been the situation in the NBA.
Yeah.
They had a guy named Donahue who got run out of the game for taking money to referee a game lousy.
But I don't know if that was did he call ticky-tack fouls or he just made bad calls?
I don't know the particulars of the fouls, but I know a lot of these college games, there's a lot of ticky-tacky fouls getting called, and that really messes up what could be a quality event. You know, I forget which game it was, but there was a game recently where in this tournament this past weekend, where both sides, like two or three guys each or girls each, had four fouls. I forget which game that was, but there were just entirely too many fouls being called in that particular game.
But how much of that is are teams that are just playing, rougher than the average norm, and the refs are saying, nah, we don't want you to play rougher than the norm. So yeah, I don't know the answer to that question, but I know what you're saying. It does slow down the game. And, it's annoying to listen to or to watch.
And if you do, you're in a championship game, it just makes no sense because the game has no pace to it whatsoever.
That's true. Yeah,
when
right.
That many calls are being made in a game that matters for all the marbles, or that'll get you sent to the Final Four if you're not already there.
But you gotta call some, right. You gotta call some fouls because you don't want the game to get out of control.
So I speaking of, go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say the question is, how do you define what a real foul? And now they've gotten so that if you really foul somebody hard, they'll go
flagrant.
Look at the replay, to determine whether it's a flagrant foul.
That's another thing that just drives me right up a wall. When they take 20 minutes to decide if it's a flagrant foul, even if it's not 20 minutes, it feels like 20 minutes when you're sitting there waiting and they do 8 commercials. They do these live read commercials, they call them. And I never liked those live reads. I used to have to do them myself and I never liked them, but they break in as many of them as they can while the three refs, who should be able to settle things by themselves, decide, I don't know how they decide, is something a flagrant foul, or is it a common foul? That's the other term. I say no blood, it's no injury, it's not a flagrant foul.
Speaking of an endless delay, how did you all like the horn refusing to stop delay?
That was hysterically funny.
That was pretty funny.
I wish I had heard that.
You could hear it surf in the background. I would not have been in the stadium. That would have been awful. how many of us have been to, say, high school basketball games or even junior high basketball games when you hear that?
There was a situation
after a second, but supposedly they can't get it to shut up.
Exactly. There was a situation at Temple University a long time ago, not even in the building they use anymore. And the horn, and I normally jokingly say 20 minutes, but this horn really did go for 20 minutes and they could not, for the love of them, for love or money, get that horn to shut up at Temple. I don't know which game this was. It was one of the men's game. I know it wasn't.
It was Illinois and, Iowa. Purdue.
I'll bet they fixed it in a lot less than 20 minutes. I'll bet they were as quick as they could be getting that.
But the thing was, they did fix it, and that was good. They also, the process had to turn off the scoreboard.
But anything can break,
That's right.
That's the thing with ABS. What if that breaks down? And what if there's a lot of ways it could? It could call 27 pitches in a row, strikes or balls. It could just completely freeze up. We've had Zoom freeze. Any one of us knows about Zoom freezing up. There's a lot of ways it can go wrong.
I think you're right. I think there are limits to, mechanical, umpires or whatever you call them.
Robo umps.
There you go.
Like RoboCop, the movie.
Let's see who we have out there that's ready to talk to us from our participant. And so let me see if there are any hands raised. Trish, what can you tell us right now?
And while we're waiting for Trish, this is a Sports Roundtable with Bob Branco and the rest of us spelunkers.
All
right.
I do not see any hands at this time.
All right, just
I
let us know when that changes.
I raise my hand, so done.
Oh, Ken? Okay, if you want to talk, I guess Ken.
Take it away, Ken.
All right, going back a few things, the young man's name was Braylon Mullins. That hit the shot. And who was it that was talking about the UConn ladies?
I was. They're my beloved Huskies.
Do you remember? It's been several years when it was 111-0. Do you remember who made it 111-1?
I think I do, actually, from your state, Mississippi.
Mississippi State Lady Bulldogs, exactly.
Yeah, I knew there was a reason I didn't like that team and didn't want them to win another game. They busted
now you
up
know.
My 111-game streak, man. Ken, that was really, I was just joking about that. For you, for
what
Mississippi,
a streak that
people,
was.
They had to be celebrating and dancing in the streets of, wherever it is, Starkville. That's the town.
Yeah, Starkville, Mississippi.
Yeah,
and this is for Mitch, since he's not here. Go Dodgers. I'm a Dodger fan also, so I'll go Dodgers for him. We're 3-0. We took care of the Diamondbacks. And so
notice that the Marlins are 3-0 also. They're in a tight race with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Tight race.
Don't forget the Yankees.
Oh, they're 3-0 also. That's right.
It's a lot of tight races this early in the season.
It's early.
It's
obviously.
Anything else, Ken?
I don't think that's about it. I enjoy listening to you guys, do your discussions, and then I'll throw a word in here and there. But I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you very much for your contribution. All right. Trish, anybody else?
Not at this time.
All right.
Yep. My Astros got off to a bad start.
Well, your Astros are waiting for our Red Sox to come into town.
Yeah, we play y'all. Yes.
Now, I've reached out to Troy Larson. If he gets the message, maybe he'll join us and talk about the situation in the Twins game.
At the Twins,
yeah, when their manager got thrown out because of a challenge delay.
Yeah.
Or what
That's
he thought was a challenge
new
delay.
New manager. They got rid of Rocco Baldelli, a good friend.
Yeah,
of
his
mine.
Name is Shell or something like that. Something Shell.
That I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe I'm saying it wrong.
Troy might.
Michael, what do you think of the return? Michael, what do you think of the return of Lance McCullers Jr.? He's pitching against the Red Sox tonight. Wow.
Well, he, in his last outing, he pitched well. He pitched well and went for, I think they let him go for 3 or 4 innings. So, we'll see.
You gotta like a guy who keeps getting injured and injured and injured again and still he keeps coming back. Do you imagine the rehab that poor guy has to have gone through to get to where he is? And instead of just saying, oh, bleep this, I'm done with this. Instead of that, he keeps coming back, hoping he can do the Astros some good and do harm to everybody else.
Well, I think from the team standpoint, this is his last shot. I don't think they're gonna give him another year after this if he doesn't do well. So that's what I'm hearing from management. I hope he does well.
Well, he's facing Ranger Suarez tonight. We'll see how that goes. And Ranger Suarez has been babied a little bit.
Yeah.
They're not giving him an ample amount of pitch count yet. They're being very cautious with him.
He was in the WBC. They better be cautious with him. You notice the people who've been in the WBC have run into problems. Nolan McLean, not so much as Paul Skeens. Skeens really got hammered on Thursday. McLean did better than a lot of the WBC people.
Well, the Astros bats, they bring them out about every other game. So we'll see if they bring out the bats tonight.
Well, we'll see what happens tonight. 8:10 start time.
Is that an away game, Bob? The Red Sox, or are they on the road?
Yes, they're in Houston.
They're in Houston. Okay.
So it's an 8:10 Eastern time slot.
Because pretty soon, what, 2 weeks or makes it 3 weeks, it's Patriots Day in Boston.
Yep, that's when they have their 11 a.m. game every year. It's a ritual. Every year, right before the marathon, or right during the marathon, actually.
I remember that. I should say. I was in Boston. I used to, when I was in Boston for 2 years, I listened to that game faithfully, because I didn't really much care about the Boston Marathon. I just never could get into it. But, you know. So I you know, it's funny. You know, we talk about baseball, and this is more to do with me than the game. I just can't get into it this early. I'm just not connected with it really until we get into, June or, you know, June basically, because it takes that long for teams to figure out who they are, right? You know, who is good, who isn't good. You know, the first 2 months it's same with the NFL, right? The first half of the season, well, the first four games really, you know, it's more a matter of, you know, who's going to get better more quickly. You know, and the same thing is sort of true in baseball, which team is going to gel at chemistry, which pitchers are going to be good, which hitters are going to, be more consistent than the first four games when they hit 643 with five home runs in the first three games. And then, you know, we never hear from them again. That happens a lot. I'm sure we can all think of examples of hitters who are great for the first 10 games and then are terrible for the rest of the year. So it takes a
while. That's why we have to take what the Marlins are doing in stride.
Yeah, no, I was being silly. There's no way the Marlins are going to be keeping up with the Dodgers through the year, but you know, it's sort of amusing, right? You know, I don't know how the Mets did over the past three games, but probably they're 1-2 knowing the Mets.
They took 2 out of 3 from the Pirates. They took the first two. One, they beat Skeens and Company 11-7. And they took the second game on a 3-run home run by Luis Robert. And the part I liked the best was to hear Howie Rose in his final season. And you know what? He sounds so good. You wouldn't believe that he would need to call this his final season, but he sounds every bit as good as he did 20 years ago.
I hope he keeps, you know, so many of these, announcers and baseball players just retire too late. We know about this. We talk about it all the time. I hope Howie Rose retires when he says he's going to retire and then comes on Sports Roundtable a couple of times. You know, I think that would be a appropriate way to start his retirement.
God knows he'd be a marvelous guest. He has more stories than you can imagine, and he's been doing it. He did the Mets pregame and postgame for 17 years, and starting in 04 when Bob Murphy called it a career, it was Howie Rose.
I think last week about how I absolutely loved the pre and post game shows that Howie Rose did when I lived in New York from about 1982 to 1998. Those pre and post game shows were well worth listening to, even if the game was terrible. You know, to see what he had to say and see what idiocy the callers were going to say, and it was great radio. It really was great radio. So,
It hasn't been anything like it since Howie started doing play by play. There's nothing like the kind of pre and post shows that he used to do. Nothing like.
Well, I occasionally turn on WFAN, which was, the station I listened to when I was in New York all the time. And it just sounds so staid and boring and whiny and not much excitement, and I'm glad I don't have to listen to them anymore. You know, I just maybe that's the way it is with other local sports stations, but boy, that FAN just sounded terrible. Every time I listen to them, I can't listen for more than like 5 minutes, and then I do something else.
It's not what we heard when the show began in 87 when FAN began.
What was that, Cindy?
Rich. I said, and we do have a hand up.
Let's do it.
All right, who is it?
Rick
from Florida?
Yep.
Hello, Rick. What's happening? Hello, Rick.
Rick, you need to unmute. I lowered his hand.
Okay, am I unmuted?
There he is. Yes.
Yes, you are. Okay. How are you, Rick? What's going on?
I'm all right. I'm okay. Good. I wanted to talk a little bit of baseball. Peter, I definitely agree with you. You know, I mean, it's the first week there's nothing to really get excited about. The Marlins are 3-0, and we know they're not going to stay that way. So, you know, like you say, there's nothing to get excited about, but it's good to watch these, new guys come along. These pitchers are phenomenal, some of them. I think we're going to see a couple of no-hitters this year. And maybe a perfect game in there.
By the way, Rick, it's important to note, too, who the Marlins beat this weekend. Colorado.
That's true.
Good point.
That's really true.
You know, Rick, they're fun. No matter, I mean, the losing, yeah, that gets old, but Jack McMullen on play-by-play, and they have several. They have Jeff Nelson, who does color with them. They have Kelly Sacco does play color with them sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they got a good bunch of broadcasters. They're worth listening to, you know, no matter about the team. And they're fun. They're fun to listen to.
And in all seriousness, we know the Marlins are going to compete for the, you know, for the World Championship. That's not going to happen, but they might, you know, compete for a playoff spot. It's not totally impossible. I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, sometimes these teams find
maybe
groove, and, you know, a team that you don't expect to do anything, makes it to the playoffs. I'm not pulling my breath on the Pittsburgh Pirates, for example. But
The Pirates are better.
Well.
Yeah, the Pirates are better. The Marlins are better. The Marlins pitching picked up a little bit this year. So,
although they got rid of Edward Cabrera, didn't they? Didn't they send him to the Cubs?
Yes.
That's
true. And I think Sandy Alcantara, is he still there, Rick, or did he go to?
I think he's there still.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think he's there still. But, you know, I think it's going to be a dog race in the East.
I think Philly has that division. Atlanta might be a close second. After that, we'll see.
Atlanta, Philly, yeah, I think it's going to come down to the wire because, Philadelphia, I don't see them getting as far as they got last year. I really don't. I don't know.
Well, no, the other issue is, and I'm speaking as a Mets fan, so you can take this for what it's worth, but, you know, the Mets were good until the last 2 months of the season. You know, if they can get their chemistry together, they might compete for the East as well. Let's talk about this 2 months from now, but they were a solid team until the last 2 months of the year. Now, obviously that doesn't make a baseball season. I get that.
Right.
But, you know, if they can get their act together, maybe they'll do something.
One mistake the Phillies made, they sent Ranger Suarez. They let him go to Boston. They've got Christopher Sanchez, and they've got at least one other good pitcher. They got Andrew Painter in the prep pipeline. If they'd hung on to Sanchez, if they'd given him, or Ranger
Jack
Suarez,
Wheeler.
If they'd, yeah, he's injured. He's out till July. That's a big problem they got.
Aaron Nola?
All the more reason they should have hung on to Ranger Suarez, no matter what it cost. They should have given him the Franklin Mint, but they let him go to Boston.
Yeah, and Peter, I agree with you. I don't, you know, you can't take these games at the beginning of the year. You have to kind of take them with a grain of salt. However, I do have to say that at the beginning of the year, the games, not in the Mets case, obviously, because they fell apart last year, but usually you could tell within the first couple of months or so how a team is going to look, how they're going to gel. Are they going to work with each other? Are they going to be good in the clubhouse? You know, that kind of shows up maybe within a month or two.
I think you're right, but there's an and to that. And the end is invariably there's a team during the last two or three months of the season that get, you know, started absolutely miserably and then they get hot. And wasn't that Seattle last year?
Yeah.
You know, who were terrible and then got hot and like kicked butt for the rest of the season and almost beat Toronto in the playoffs. So I agree. You know, it's just a weird sport.
It is.
It just takes a while. And there's, for me, there's so much happening in basketball and hockey and college mm-hmm. basketball and
yeah.
whatever else is going on. And I just can't focus on too many, you know, that many things right now.
We still got hockey.
We have hockey and
yeah.
The playoffs start, in basketball in 2 weeks and hockey probably in three.
3 weeks.
About the yeah. same time.
Yeah. Usually hockey starts a week later after basketball. But not always. And so I'm sort of expecting that to happen. And you know, there's so much happening right now that for me, yeah. I can't focus my energy on baseball right now.
The other experiment I'm looking at, sort of continuing to watch is San Francisco, the Giants with
Tony Vitello,
college baseball coach.
Oh, yes. It'll be very interesting to see what
they're 0-3 now, though,
thanks to the Yankees.
So we'll see whether they start to turn it on. You know, by the time you're talking about Peter, you know, we'll have a good idea of whether this experiment will work.
We have yep, one
the
minute.
The other thing about the Yankees and Don, I'm curious here. The Yankees always seem to be just good enough to make the playoffs. They're like Duke. They're men's basketball. They're just going to make the playoffs and then they find a way to lose.
Exactly.
That's what they Buffalo did Bills.
Or, right. Buffalo Bills. Same thing. Or Buffalo Bills.
Yeah. Yeah. Buffalo's a good. Yeah.
And the Mets have done the same thing a couple of times. You know, at 7 and at 8, they collapsed right at the last, right? Almost like the Philadelphia Phillies of the 60s.
And we are out of time, gentlemen. Thank you so much for another great week. Mitch, I hope you had a great time on Catalina Island. Luther, I hope you're back real soon. Your voice gets back to normal. And I want to thank also Brad and Trish for helping us out. I want to thank Rick and Ken and the rest of the participants. Some talked to us and some did not, but that's okay. You listened, and that's great. Thank you, gentlemen, Peter, Michael, Don. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. Talk to you next week.